We're very fortunate for this last session of the conference to be joined by four gentlemen who run the schemes in WA, South Australia, Victoria and New South Wales to discuss where the schemes have been recently, what changes they've implemented along with the challenges and what current trends are driving the schemes and the outlook for the next 2 to 5 years. Each of my guests will speak for 10 minutes. Right, gentlemen? 10 minutes? Yes, and then we'll have time for Q&A at the end. So I might introduce all of you and then we can get cracking. So immediately to my right, Len Boehm, currently the Executive Director of Injury Support and Service at WorkSafe Victoria. Len spent many years in the compensation industry, particularly in the Victorian Work Cover Authority and the Transport Accident Commission. And his roles have varied widely, from claims officer, customer service manager, to secretary to the board and director of research. Len has been privileged to be a member of teams that have led positive recoveries for two of Victoria's compensation schemes. Please make him welcome. And just before you get started, let me introduce Andrew Nichols. That's okay, stay here. Just keep me company. Andrew is General Manager of the New South Wales Motor Accidents Authority. He has more than 25 years' experience in policy strategy and planning in the New South Wales public sector, including transport, ports, natural resources, land management, IT. He was previously the Director of Policy and Reform at the Department of Transport, where he led a number of transport reform initiatives. He's also a Director of the Personal Injury Education Foundation and a former VP of the Institute of Public Administration. Welcome, Andrew. Wearing stripes this afternoon is Lou Watts. Lou has been working for the Insurance Commission of Western Australia and its antecedents, the SGIC and the SGIO, for almost 40 years. He's currently the Deputy Chief Executive, responsible for the insurance operations of the Insurance Commission, including CTP Risk Cover and the Special Investigations Division. Welcome. And Greg McCarthy, CEO of WorkCover South Australia. I introduced you with the full bio yesterday. Is there anyone who wasn't here yesterday? Great. Welcome back. All right, gentlemen, the microphone is yours. Take it away.
This time for sure, Rocky. My wife has a saying about me. She said if they gave me ruled paper, I'd write sideways, or the opposite way to the lines, which I will actually do today as well. Because given you've all had the scheme updates, plus you've had a number of the major themes relating to all schemes presented at the various sessions, I've decided to take the tack of really tackling and coming in on a few sound bites around some key reoccurring themes within our systems that we don't normally talk about. So let me try a few sound bites on you. Now, I heard Jeff speak eloquently on common law in another session, and he used the expression that economics in our systems nearly always triumphs over ideology. That version of it's a bit too stark for me, so I thought I'd start by replacing it with no money, no mission. This is the motto of most charitable organisations. It really should be our motto as well. It's a bit more soft as the message than the other one. You can't manage what you don't measure. And I think this theme is crucial for every single crisis we go through and for all the challenges in our industry. And I want to bring that life with an actual example that we all still struggle with in all states. The majority of workers' comp schemes and virtually all insurers do not reliably, operationally measure return to work. They measure something called continuance rates, which we all do differently and more or less accurately. In Victoria, a few years ago, we replaced that with an actual return to work measure, checking everyone's status at 6 months post-claim. And we discovered that the insurer who was the very best at continuance rates was not the best at return to work. There are other things that get people off benefits, as you all know. And so we actually found out we were sometimes measuring how good they were at using termination provisions. Now, how does best practice evolve anywhere if you don't have some reliable measurement, reliable window that an industry can look back at itself on. How would you go with football, kicking at the goals, at the sticks, but there are no points awarded, there's no score at all kept. Or alternatively, it's random each time. It just doesn't work. You can't evolve professional sports or anything else if you can't measure the effectiveness of your systems at a deep operational level against what you really do. I raise that because we've been running Return to Work for a century and have not actually given our providers in the industry a deep mirror to look at to see and feedback on how effective they really all are. I raise that as just one example of this challenge in sustainability implementation of the importance of measurement, not as a measurement issue, but as a cultural issue, because it's the culture of looking at yourself in the mirror and changing that drives performance and evolution of schemes. We can't, but do, blame our legislation for everything. Some of it must lie with how we've implemented it. I'm going to jump back. That theme plays out every day in every scheme and will play out, I know, in some of the discussions and issues raised by some of the other speakers. Let me take you back in a time machine to the middle of the 80s when TAC first introduced the serious injury threshold in common law. You may remember in a prior session, Jeff Atkins asked, how has TAC and TAC been able to manage that weak definition all these years? What happened at the time is the words came out from the legislators, and I remember them as follows. Blah, 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 blah. I may be missing a blah, I'm not sure. Because until the courts get at it, whatever's written doesn't necessarily mean anything. Now, TAC set out to manage the early precedents. They deliberately gave in on cases they thought were too emotional and they couldn't possibly win, even though they didn't think they were seriously injured. And they picked carefully the cases they would run to court. And then they rang them and said, we don't believe you're entitled to benefits, but the law's pretty new and we're not sure. We are prepared to sponsor your case to take us on to the higher courts. And the first two precedents, Humphreys and Poljak, have held together that definition for most of the last 20 years. So was it the legislation, or was it now ability to utilise basic management and other tools to actually manage it? Now, you may not know this statistic, but 7 out of 10 claim strategies fail because they're not implemented effectively. Now, I actually just made that up. But anyone who has worked in this industry a long time and is honest finds that the perennial challenge is the ability for us to actually implement our strategies. Strategies to me seem actually easier to find than the ability to operationalise them. And if I look back at all the mistakes I have made through either not consulting properly or not having proper feedback loops or not selling the message, and if we're honest about our own experience, it remains one of the biggest challenges in our industry. We have a tendency to see the strategy as the solution. Well, a strategy multiplied by zero implementation equals zero impact. It's not very sexy, but it remains one of the main problems and is usually behind somewhere in the background when a scheme actually gets itself in stook. Now for a personal one, which I do think has relevance in all systems. Is stress a sustainable part of workers' compensation long term? Yes or no? First of all, let me declare my bias. When I was a young claims officer, I suffered a stress claim and was off work for about 5 weeks. I used to come in at 5 a.m. to keep up with my work because I wasn't very good. And I developed a body tremor where I shook uncontrollably for 3 days. It was quite scary, and I remember actually being wheeled out as I shook. And I needed the help of the compensation system to get me back to work. So I have a bias in terms of my answer. At one of these conferences, and I think it was about 8 years ago, a group of us were talking who work in claims, and we were getting pretty pessimistic about whether we could actually manage stress-type claims as part of the system. The ambiguity of the clinical conditions and the diagnosis, the massive overlap with industrial issues and with life in general. And we thought, we're out of our depth here and all schemes are going to struggle. And we actually predicted that we thought within 10 years, stress would not be covered because we would not be able to manage it. A bit like Jeff's comments on common law earlier. 8 years later, I am much, much more optimistic. Firstly, because Victoria still has a compensation scheme. We have a very low premium, we still cover stress, and the sky has not actually fallen. Secondly, because I take heart from what's occurred in Canada, many compensation systems do not cover mental injuries. They do not cover stress. The Germans have said it's too hard. The Swiss, most of the US, New Zealand, the wonderful New Zealand schemes never covered it. And Canada never used to cover it. And they lost a high court case, I think on human rights, or a court case on human rights, and they had to change their position. But that to me says it's still the right and best social policy. And thirdly, I take some comfort from the fact that our safety organisations, much more than 8 years ago, are putting skin into the game. Every day when I pick up cases, every second one I wonder why we're covering it. How did this get in? Should it be in? Goodness gracious me. But every second one I just go, thank God we're here, and thank God we are not like those systems that do not cover stress. With those themes put out there to set the scene to help my colleagues, I now retire gracefully.